This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
A good time. It's 6:30 a.m. on a very, very cold morning here in New York City. We don't care. We got a hot show. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright.
One thing I must address. Yesterday, you didn't know what happened. There was an embarrassing moment, see? I tried to go like this to you. Yeah. You were looking that way. I ended up having to go to Broussard after being left hanging for a minute. So now
we're okay, I got you, man.
Not your fault, but screenshotted, sent to me a dozen times.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I was wondering why you brought
it up. I'm Kyrie, man. I'm in my mentions. I'm in my feelings.
Oh,
I can't listen
to you.
You
are looking at your mentions.
I can't. Yeah, man. So we had to fix that. Thank you. Now I feel better.
Good to see you,
Jenna.
Do you feel better?
Absolutely. I like the sweater.
Thank you very much. I look sophisticated. I'm going to go with that all day today. Plenty to get to.
It's better when other people say it about you than when you say it about yourself.
Say it. Okay. Did Magic Johnson give too much control to LeBron James? We'll talk about that. Plus, bad news for Kyler Murray. But we start today's show with the very lopsided Warriors-Celtics game. And not the lopsided you may be thinking. To the Bay we go, where the Celtics did an about-face. 30 points from Gordon Hayward, 19 points from Kyrie Irving, and the Celtics won the game. Yes, they beat the Warriors 128-95. Warriors were never quite in this one, trailed by 25 points at halftime, and not a pretty scene for that guy right there, Boogie Cousins. He was hit with a technical after a charge call for standing over Aaron Baines just a little too long. Celtics will take the win. Here's Kyrie on just how important that win was.
Since All-Star break, even before then, we haven't been playing our best brand of basketball. So we want to come out and just put emphasis on both ends of the floor, but especially defensively. You know, playing here is always tough. So we want to come out and just make a statement. We were going to get to a point where we were just going to get tired of, you know, fighting each other, fighting, you know, the outside world, and it doesn't really matter. So we just want to come out here and just play basketball. This is our sanctuary, and we have to do everything to protect it. We can't let anybody infiltrate this.
And if we want to be the team that we want to be come April, you can't continue to just talk about it and talk about it and expect to be able to flip a switch. At some point these next 16 games, we gotta show it.
All right, CC, I'll start with you. How'd they do it? How'd the Celtics beat the Warriors and beat them pretty badly?
Right. I mean, I'm surprised that the Celtics were able to put such importance on the game, given that they've played so bad since the All-Star break. Before coming into last night's game, they had one win and had played poorly, had no type of identity offensively what they were doing, the sound bites coming out of the locker room. I mean, Kyrie Irving, like, how many personalities does the guy have?
I know.
I mean, because every single day his opinion changes.
And
those interviews are a lot easier to do when you win.
He was in the best mood I've seen him in a long time. On the court, he was interviewed as a players-only broadcast, so Caron Butler, which is you typically get a little more out of these guys even when they're not in a great spot when it's a colleague, when it's a guy they've gone
Yes, they have a lot more respect and that they know the telecast is around the players and that they would be a great asset in helping the players in the telecast.
And so Kyrie was in a great mood. I think Caron got a lot out of him. It was a nice interview. If people haven't seen anything, go back online and look at it. But Kyrie also said something after the game that we didn't play there that was interesting, which was the plane ride. So the Celtics went from the East Coast all the way out west. They're going to play all four California
teams.
They
had a big game Sunday afternoon against Houston, a game they did not look good in.
Absolutely. And so he said that in that long plane ride, he sat and talked to Brad for a while, sat and talked to Danny Ainge for a while, and the team as a whole had time to kind of release some of the tension and to get back on the same page because just 24 hours ago, Jaylen Brown said something I thought very interesting that went under the radar. He called the Celtics environment toxic.
That's a strong word.
It's an interesting word. We've heard that word used by Kevin Durant talking about what the situation is around LeBron James. We have heard, so he said that we have a toxic situation right now. But when you play your best game of the season, and when the way you win is because the guy who has been the unspoken albatross around for your team this year, Gordon Hayward, has what I believe to be his best game as a Celtic, best all-around game, particularly given the competition, that relieves a lot of that tension because nobody wants to blame Gordon Hayward because they know how good of a guy he is. They know he's coming off the injury. But Gordon Hayward's been a huge problem. But the Celtics are now, and this is a jump out at you number, 18-2 when Gordon Hayward shoots just 50% from the field. 18-2 when Gordon Hayward's 50% or better from the field. That trend continued last night.
But I just want to jump on what you said. One of the other things that Kyrie said, which was interesting, is we weren't having fun on the court. We forgot to do that. We were so busy dealing with the media and the criticism, we forgot to do the one thing that we all love to do, which is just play basketball. And last night, yes, the Warriors played terribly. 22 turnovers. They didn't play well. But the Celtics looked like they were having fun. And we all said that's the way to get away from that toxic environment. Go back to the thing you all do well, which is play basketball.
Yeah, they were all bought into what Brad Stevens. Now, Nick, we talked about over the last several years, Boston has played Golden State tough. Earlier in the season, they had a very good game in Boston that the Celtics lost there late. But this can be about strategy because they did put Boogie Cousins in the pick and roll and they did attack him from a strategy standpoint on the offensive end, which we know the Celtics have struggled with that. We know they're going to always be with Brad Stevenson a top 10, typically a top 5 defensive team. But to me, it was about that plane ride. It's about you have galvanizing moment as professionals. And that's the thing that's different about working in an office environment than being on a pro sports team. I tell you, man, you live together, basically. You sleep together. You travel together. You eat together. You shower together. You use the bathroom together.
Not always.
And a lot of times, if you don't like people, it's hard to do your job. It's different when you have a normal job where you're working 8-9 hours. You go home or you get away and you don't travel that much together. But when you're on a professional sports team and you don't like the other people on that team, it becomes hard to do your job. It becomes hard to sacrifice. So whatever they said on that plane ride, it made a huge difference because that's the really only way you can describe who the Celtics were last night compared to the team that we've seen since the All-Star break.
And, Jen, it was from the opening tip. It was 11-0 to start that basketball game.
Yes.
The Warriors never had a lead. We've seen a lot of games where the Warriors maybe start slow. Even if they lose, they make a push, they take a lead, and then they fall back. They never had a lead. It's the worst home loss for this Warriors team since Monte Ellis was on the team. So, obviously, the worst home loss since Steve Kerr's been the coach. They were down by 35 points at one point. They lost the game by 33. And to your point, over the last 3 years now, so the Celtics, the IT Celtics, last year's Celtics, and this year's Celtics, they're 3-3 against Golden State. And you might say, well, that's better than almost any team in the league. In fact, I think any team in the league except for the Rockets.
Yes.
Against Golden State. One of the reasons Boston had the buzz that it had going into this year, going into last year when they get Kyrie, is because they have shown an ability to guard Golden State. They have shown an ability, even with when they weren't as talented as they are now, that they can match up with Golden State, that they can throw length at Kevin Durant, that they can throw Marcus Smart at Steph Curry. And the Warriors, and I know we'll talk about it from their angle later on, they missed Klay Thompson last night. You don't have Klay, KD has an off night, all of a sudden you don't have a ton of shooting. That showed up last night.
Yeah, Klay Thompson sitting out with that sore knee. So here's the question I want to ask. This isn't the way the Celtics have been playing since the All-Star break at all. You're not expected to get 30 points out of Gordon Hayward every night. We haven't seen any part of this. But can a win like this galvanize this team? Can it help them sort of push the rest of their momentum into the postseason?
If the Celtics can make up their mind that regardless of what happens next year, regardless of what happens in the summer, we're going to buy into the system we're going to run, and we're going to buy into winning no matter what we have to do. That's the first thing that's got to happen. Whatever they conversate about on the plane, they have to be able to continue that. And who's Gordon Hayward?
Right.
Which one is going to show up? Now, I can't expect him to get 30 on 16 shots. No, I can't expect that. But Is he going to be more explosive? Is he going to shoot the ball from deep? Is he going to be a liability athletically on the defensive end? Those are the things that I've seen. How are those things going to change coming down the stretch? The athleticism, I don't see that changing. Can he add another shooter that can, Nick, you mentioned, you know, he's shooting at 50%. They have a ridiculous record. So for me, can he shoot the ball effectively? Because if he gets those minutes and those guys start feeling bad about him getting those minutes, the only way he justified giving him those minutes is he's got to play well.
Right. So to me, the key, can this be a rallying moment for the Celtics? Emotionally, sure, yes. But they are not a good enough team to make the NBA Finals unless they get a version of this Gordon Hayward. Doesn't have to be 37-4 like he was last night. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be a guy that can regularly give you 20 points. He has only scored more than 20 points four times all year. That's a huge problem for them. So if he can be a guy they can rely on as a sixth man, then this team is different. I don't know if he can be that guy.
The Celtics made a lot of big plays last night, a lot of outstanding the way they ran their offense. Defensively, they were helping. But when Gordon Hayward made plays and made shots, the body language of the team changed. One time, Kyrie made a great pass to him. He knocks down a three-pointer, and Kyrie is kind of skipping down the court because they realize that he was a very good basketball player, and what happened to him was unfortunate. If they get the better version of Gordon Hayward, I think the Celtics can get a turn.
I'm glad you pointed out that play just quickly. On that same play, Al Horford's on the bench, and Al Horford's on the bench celebrating like the 13th man typically does, like the guy who's a bench all-star. They are rooting for Gordon because they know they need him and because he's one of the better people on the team.
Go back and listen to or read some of the other post-game comments from some of his teammates who were so excited for him. They're saying he has to keep getting back out there and shooting because if nothing else, it helps his confidence. It may not be another 30-point game, but if they can get something close, they could definitely use it. Take a break coming up. Talk some Lakers. Did Los Angeles allow LeBron to have a little too much influence on roster moves? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Here's something interesting. Studies show that security systems deter burglars. It's a fact, but there's still a burglary every 8 seconds in America. How? Well, think about it. Do burglars give up just because some houses have security systems? Of course not. They just find a house that isn't protected. That's why securing your home is truly a necessity. So let me recommend this brilliant security system built by my friends at Simply Safe. Simply Safe believes fear has no place in a place like home. So they made their system ridiculously smart. Simply Safe sensors will protect every point of access to your home, doors, windows, garage, you name it. Best of all, Simply Safe's 24/7 monitoring is just $14.99 a month. Alarms that cry wolf? No thanks. Simply Safe's precision engineered motion sensors detect the unique heat signature of humans, not pets, and they'll never lock you in a long-term contract. So go with the only home security I trust, Simply Safe, by going to simplysafe.com/FTF. Go today and get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. That's simplysafe.com/FTF for the home security I trust, simplysafe.com/FTF.
We'll get to the Lakers in a second, but first, couple of fun big plays from last night. Bulls Pacers, Zach LaVine taking it to the rack, throwing it down over Miles Turner.
Man, he dunks so easy sometimes. It's with so little effort. Definitely one of the best dunkers that we have in game in the NBA.
Thunder, Timberwolves, Karl-Anthony Towns.
Oh, your guy, see?
That's my guy, man. I mean, he's probably got a vertical leap like 60 now that Jimmy Butler's off of his neck. I mean, who's improved more in the NBA this year with one transaction than Karl-Anthony Towns taking over the Timberwolves?
An improvement within the season, an emotional improvement that led to a physical improvement.
Horford, Celtics Warriors. Horford finds a cutting Jaylen Brown for the rim-rattling one-handed jam.
So this is coming out of Cal, this is what we knew he could do. We knew he could defend.
Yes.
We knew he could jump out the gym. Him adding that three-point shot last year that's kind of betrayed him a bit this year was what we didn't see coming. He is a spectacular athlete, though. I loved this play. I'm glad this got in there.
Yup, Jason Tatum running down Kevin Durant for the block and the steal effort.
Great timing. Give me that. Man, As a basketball player, this is one of the more embarrassing things happen. If you miss a wide open dunk or you get your shot smashed.
And the two-handed block that snatched, you know what it reminds me of? MJ with the Wizards.
Oh, okay.
One of his best highlights with the Wizards. The two-hand right there, take it off the backboard, start the fast break the other way.
I thought at 6:47 you was getting ready to force a guy into the show.
Oh, no. Not the greatest defensive play in NBA history. I wasn't going to talk about that one. Speaking of that guy.
No defense. Speaking of no defense.
Let's talk a little Lakers. Among the many reasons this team is struggling this year, the lack of shooters to help out LeBron. Well, in a recent story by Ramona Shelburne, she reports that last offseason, LeBron spoke with Magic Johnson and asked to be surrounded by playmakers, guys known for their toughness. As a result, their shooting has suffered. They're the second worst three-point shooting team in the NBA this season. Nick, did the Lakers give LeBron a little too much control?
So this is a really interesting story because Ramona Shelburne is as good as it gets and as plugged in as it gets and has been in L.A. for some time now. So she has relationships with that organization that predate LeBron getting there. So it's a well-sourced report. But it also, and Chris Broussard said something similarly, that went against what I had been hearing, which was that unequivocally LeBron did not give a list of names to Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka. So I was trying to square this circle and figure out, all right, so what's right, what's wrong here? So I had got a very interesting text exchange yesterday with a Western Conference executive who I've never talked to before. It's our first time ever talking elongated like this. And it was actually about Luke Walton. But then I started probing on this. And what he described as his understanding makes both of these reports make sense. Magic did ask LeBron the types of players he wanted. LeBron did prioritize playmakers over shooters. LeBron didn't give him a list of names. And then Magic and Rob Pelinka presented LeBron with, here are the guys we think we can get on one-year deals that fit with the cap. Do you sign off on them? So it was more cumulative than I had been led to believe, but it wasn't LeBron presenting the names. So here's the issue with all of it. One, if you are going to go with playmakers, you need good basketball players. You need guys that aren't just a playmaker in name only. You need guys that are more productive than Lance, than JaVale McGee's not a playmaker, than Michael Beasley, those guys. Rondo's been hit or miss. And the other is a totally fair criticism of LeBron, and this was the point the executive made to me, is he's never been a great evaluator of other guys' talent. It's never been one of the things he's been good at. He's been good at knowing who he thinks he would like to play with. But whether it's guys coming out of school or whether it's guys in the league, evaluating other guys that aren't star players has never been one of LeBron's strengths. And this is a part where the Lakers, before the year, it would appear, put a ceiling on what they could be. Now, it shouldn't be this bad, obviously, because the offense was never going to be as good as it should have been because they never had adequate shooting.
So the question is, did the Lakers give LeBron too much control? Is it considered too much control if, like Nick said, you're even handed a list of players maybe you didn't come up with and asked, hey, do you want these guys on the team? Is that too much control? Should a player be able to dictate who he wants or if he wants those players?
Well, these are the things that happen when you're trying to formulate a basketball team. These things have happened for years. It's not new. Let's just, because it's LeBron James, it will be heightened. But, of course, when LeBron makes that decision to go to the Los Angeles Lakers, and because you really respect, and people in the NBA, they respect LeBron's basketball IQ. But his inability to potentially know talent. But who in the NBA does know the talent? Of all the top 10 players, do we think any of these guys, if they're given the opportunity, they would be able to pick? No, they shouldn't be able to. All right, that's a skill set that is developed over a long course of time. And most of the time, you only get good at that when you're removed from the game. And your skill level is not part of the evaluation. So LeBron, I wouldn't be surprised that him or any other players, they wouldn't be really good as far as evaluating the players around them. I thought that LeBron really missed it. The style that's been successful for him, and that's him with a bunch of shooters around him. And that's why I believe that if LeBron can get some simulation of what he had in Miami, where Pat Riley, he wasn't coming to LeBron asking him till they had earned some type of respect through playing together and seeing what the team needed. And it most of the time was shooters around LeBron. So for me, when you don't have that strong guy picking the players, and I really don't have any faith in the Lakers front office, well, being real good as far as talent evaluators and talent developers.
That's the other part of it, is I think it's clear that the best method for a LeBron James-led team to be successful at the, on the offensive end is obviously LeBron plus shooters. But what would this have looked like if you got this style of player, but just better players? What would it have looked like if Lance and Rondo weren't your major offseason acquisitions? Because the other weakness of relying on a player to help you pick the players or to sign off on guys, where's Rajon Rondo spent the vast majority of his career? The Eastern Conference, right? Where at least the best part of his career.
Yeah, those are the guys you're more familiar with.
Lance Stephenson, the Eastern Conference. Beasley played with LeBron in Miami, and he's bounced around and played in China. JaVale is one of their offseason acquisitions, but JaVale was a minimum contract guy. Like, there's only so many centers you can go get. Like, you're going to be guys you've played against, guys right. you've known. They played against Rondo in the playoffs, played against Lance in the playoffs, played with Michael Beasley before.
But you also have to realize, too, this was not a great list. It wasn't like they passed over a bunch of good players that qualify as we need guys that we think can be playmakers. We need guys that LeBron might be familiar with. And we need guys that will sign a one-year deal.
That is the other element of this that I think Brian Windhorst has talked a lot about. And I think it shouldn't be an underrated it's been an underrated storyline, which is when things start to go sideways, when it's not just the young guys who are on the trade block. It's the guys who are on expiring deals saying,
yes.
I have no future here.
Right.
Why do I need to buy into the coach? So Steven Jackson went on the herd and talked about Beasley.
Hey, but how many people playing on this Lakers team besides LeBron has an actual future on the team?
Well, that is one of the reasons everyone can let go of the rope. And I think they had to keep the flexibility. They had to try to get Kawhi. You had to go with the one-year deal route. But this was one of the weaknesses of not getting Paul George 2 years ago, not being able to trade for Kawhi, not getting Anthony Davis within the season, is those guys have no vested interest in the team.
Right.
Like, for Rondo is looking for his next deal. Lance is looking for his next deal. They both know they're not going to be on the team down
the road.
They
were banking on getting at least one or two playoff series and people seeing, wow, these guys can still play.
So let's keep them there.
Yes.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up. Could the latest news on Kyler Murray hurt his NFL future? Wait till you hear what one executive seems to think. We discuss next on First Things First.
This Saturday night, don't miss the biggest pay-per-view fight of the year. Two of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world put their perfect records on the line. Errol Spence Jr. takes on Mikey Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship live from AT&T Stadium. Spence Jr. versus Garcia, Saturday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Order now.
Welterweight world champion Showtime, Sean Porter, defends his belt for the first time live in primetime Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It is only on Fox. All right, time now for us to go viral. Trade target Antonio Brown recently said he doesn't need football. And if you were wondering where the 30-year-old wide receiver will turn for income, watch these $500 personalized videos he is now sending out.
Happy 38th birthday. And I hear this your second anniversary wedding. I hear you've been working really hard as a defense attorney, and your birthday is here. Happy birthday. We celebrate you today. Hope your birthday is booming.
See, I gotta tell you, man.
What?
All right, so this is a little.
Explain it to me.
Okay, so you can pay $500. It's a sliding scale depending on how prominent the person is.
Yeah.
And you get them to send you a 30 to 60 second personalized message. We got one in the works for you, see, from Mr. Big Chest himself. Now, I don't know if it's gonna be rejected because of some of your television commentary about the aforementioned Mr. Big Chest.
You guys put in the request?
I did it on my own.
This man, I'm so excited.
This isn't FS1 money. This is out of the Nick Wright personal account.
Man, I'm so
$500 couldn't be better spent.
Absolutely. I mean, the kind of money you're making off of my name? Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do it. Just had your first anniversary wedding day something.
Yes.
Antonio. And by the way, did you see the video? I do have to give Antonio props. If that's his house, he's got a giant inflatable water slide
beautiful.
Pool.
Beautiful.
Living his best life. $500. All right, so $500. Let's say that took him 1 minute to do it.
Wow.
If he did that as a full-time job, 2,000 hours a year, It's like $60 million he would make.
That's awesome.
He don't need football. See, $60 million bucks a year.
He needs a script writer. Spend some of the money
right. Or spend 2 minutes on it and be like, second take. Second take, guys.
Time for stories to start your morning. Rockets, Raptors. Last night, James Harden dropped 35, including 19 in the fourth quarter, as the Rockets picked up their sixth straight win. The Raptors have gone just 3-3 since the All-Star break. Nick, what'd you make of the Rockets' win last night?
Longest winning streak in basketball at the moment. Harden and Chris Paul were not good through three quarters. Mm-hmm. I think they were combined 7 of 26 from the field through three quarters. Very good fourth quarter for Houston after they had blown the better part of a 20-point lead. Rockets all the way up to third in the West now. Raptors, meanwhile, still figuring out that bench rotation. Mark Gasol, the bench last night was terrible.
Man, I'm excited about the Rockets, man. Daryl Morey sat right here and told us, we're going to make a couple moves. I still got confidence in this team. And remember what he said last year, Nick? And people's like, oh, man, you can't be upset. Okay, that obsession has him put together another quality team. If I was the Warriors, this is the team I'd be afraid of.
It's the only team I think they're a little afraid of.
All right, on to the NFL now, where reports are circulating that the Chiefs are working on a record-setting deal for wideout Tyreek Hill. In three seasons, Hill has 25 receiving touchdowns, 4 touchdowns on the ground, and 5 special teams touchdowns. So, in other words, smart move by the Chiefs. CeCe, what do you think of the Chiefs planning on signing him to a record-breaking deal?
Man, they got to do it. That kid, forget the Chiefs, man. That kid convinced me because I was not a believer that he could be one of the elite receivers in the league. Not because I doubt his skills, because we had never seen someone with, I'm talking about world-class speed, who is a punt returner, kick returner, become a dominant number one wide receiver. So I got to give him credit. He has mastered the route tree, plays inside, play outside. You can't bump him off the line of scrimmage, even in double coverage. But the one thing, his ability to catch the ball in traffic as a small guy, that's not a skill set that typically smaller receivers have.
Look, he is not the best receiver in football. I don't think he's better than Julio. I don't think he's better than Odell. But the Chiefs would not trade him for any receiver in football. Given the offense, what they do with him out of the backfield, and Pat Mahomes' arm, he is the perfect receiver for this offense, and he might become the first $20 million a year receiver.
Yeah, he's not the best wide receiver, but he's the most frightening.
Yeah, most dangerous.
Yes.
Absolutely, and perfect for that offense.
The New York Football Giants are letting all-pro safety Landon Collins become a free agent. They are not placing the franchise tag on him. Interesting move for a team that allowed 26 points per game last season. See, what did you make of the Giants' decision to let Landon Collins walk?
This is a tough decision. This is a tough decision because you drafted this kid. He's had some success. But I can understand why guys like Dave Gettleman, everything, when you have a quarterback, you're going to pay $23 million. And you know he's potentially in the last year. And you know you might spend a high draft pick on another quarterback. And you got a top 5 running back you're paying on his rookie wage scale, but that's still a lot of money. You got Odell Beckham. He's making $18 million a year. You got to cut some corners. And typically it happens on the defensive side. Because Eli Manning, they're going to lose out on a couple players. Now, do I believe that Landon Collins, should they have placed a franchise tag on him? I don't think so. Because at that number, $11 million, it's going to get them into some long-term money problems. I don't believe because he's a limited football player. He's very good close to the line of scrimmage. He's a deficiency in pass coverage. I like Landon Collins. But when you talk about paying a secondary player, because I'm looking at the rest of that roster and the amount of money, the pie is only so big. And when you take an inordinate amount of that pie and give it to the offensive players, which they have with the New York Football Giants, the bad contract they gave Nate Solder last year in free agency, there's only so much left. And they need a pass rusher. They need a defensive tackle. Like, these things are real. And the market for free agent safeties is wide open. There's a bundle of them that you can get if you do lose Landon Collins.
So I want to talk about the money part of this in just a second, but you mentioned the football part, and I want you to expand on it, because people look at Landon Collins as the back of his football card, see 3 Pro Bowls, 1 first team All Pro, what got Defensive Player of the Year votes in 2016, and I think people look at him as an elite safety in this league.
But coming off a pretty bad year for him, his worst career.
The whole team coming off a bad season, sure, but what you're telling me and what you were saying before the show is his numbers in pass coverage are glaring compared to his numbers against the run, and that you think those some of those Pro Bowls are maybe on name and rep rather than on production, and that he hasn't been one of the three best safeties in football over this
when the Giants put him close to the line of scrimmage, he looks like a Pro Bowl player. But in pass coverage, man-to-man, or even in zone, zone coverage in particular, he hadn't been very, very good. Anytime that he is in the area of a wide receiver being man or zone, they're completing 70% of the passes. Now, I know people think they know a lot of football, but when you break it down, real football, it's hard to pay a in-the-box safety in this new NFL where you got three receivers, four receivers, you got backs coming out of the backfield, you got tight ends they're trying to throw to. It's hard to have a guy that only excels in the box because there are not that many teams trying to run the football and jam it down the defense's throat.
So I think all those are fair points. Here's why I don't like the process for the New York Giants on this. At the trade deadline, going into last season, they thought they were going to be good. So you're not going to trade away guys on last year of their deal. They're trying to compete right now. Trade deadline last year, they're 1-7. They trade away Damon Harrison. They trade away Eli Apple. It was as robust of a trade market at the, during the season as I've ever seen in the NFL. You need to know, with 8 weeks left in the season, if this day is coming, because you could have gotten something for Landon Collins then. The other part of the process I don't like is Dave Gettleman talked exactly what CeCe was talking about. We only have so much money. So, okay, you don't want to commit long-term, make Landon Collins the highest-paid safety ever. Okay, fine. That's what the franchise tag is there for. You don't want to commit $11 million to him next year. Well, that's where the $23 million you're paying Eli Manning really irks me. Eli Manning is the second-highest-paid player in the history of pro football, and this year will pass his brother to become the highest-paid player in the history of pro football. The Giants have been incredibly loyal to him. The moment the Jags signed Nick Foles, there is no market for Eli Manning. Like, maybe Tom Coughlin would give him a lifeline, but if they sign Foles, it's over. Why has Dave Gettleman not gone to Eli Manning and said, you're slated to make $23 million. We need you to take a $10 million pay cut. If not, listen, we don't want to cut you. We don't want to trade you. We want you to be a lifetime Giant. If you refuse, then you're choosing not to be a lifetime Giant. His play doesn't warrant $23 million a year. Then you've got the franchise tag money for Landon Collins, or if you want to use it elsewhere. It's one thing to be loyal to Eli Manning. Right. It's another thing to not ask him to bend at all as far as what is his
That's
recourse.
The way Denver got their last Super Bowl. They went to Peyton Manning. So it's no disrespect.
That's
Peyton
a
Manning
great
took,
point.
Peyton Manning took a pay cut in that last year with Denver. Took less because they were going to rely on that defense. They needed to keep some of those defensive players, resulting in them winning that Super Bowl.
That's the part of this that bothers me the most. No matter what you think of Landon Collins as a player, is like, where's the process? Where's the foresight about moving him at the deadline?
And when your team is 1-7.
And right now, where is the discussion with Eli Manning about the money?
All right, we got to move on to Kyler Murray now. Murray has been picking up momentum as the number one overall pick in April's draft. That momentum might have come to a screeching halt yesterday when we learned more about his combine appearance. Not his measurables, his height and hand measurements, those eased a number of teams. It was his interviews that reportedly did not. Here's what NFL Network's Charlie Casserly had to say about Kyler's interviews.
Well, you better hope Kingsbury takes him number one, because this was not good. This was the worst comments I ever got on a high-rated quarterback.
Really?
And I've been doing this a long time. I'm probably doing it longer than you're alive anyway.
You yes, have. That's why I said, leadership. Really?
Yes, leadership, not good. Okay, study habits, not good. The board work, below not good. Not good at all in any of those areas, see? And raising major concerns about what this guy's going to do. Now, people will say, well, we're going to compare him to Mahomes. We're going to run an offense like Mahomes. We're going to run an offense like Baker Mayfield. But those guys are much different. I mean, those guys, you never question about their ability on the board. You never question their leadership ability, their work habits. They were outstanding in those areas. This guy's not outstanding in those areas. It showed up in the interview.
Wow. See, what do you make of those comments about Kyler Murray?
Well, I think that sometimes the scrutiny that certain quarterbacks are under is totally different. I know the quarterbacks they had last year, because if this continues, this would be tougher scrutiny than we saw the five quarterbacks last year. Josh Allen, tremendous question marks about him, his ability on the football field. Like, he was not a good college football player. There were questions about Lamar as far as his board work, his throwing motion, even people questioning him, should he play another position? But they didn't get the type of scrutiny as this. Do I believe Charlie Casserly is wrong? I just believe that sometimes, and Kyler, we have to realize, in the last 45 days, he decided to play pro football. So did someone prepare him for the interviews the way he should have been prepared? Obviously not. Now, do I think he has the type of personality that might be a little bit different? Yes, but I've met other NFL players that were like him. Not particularly the quarterback, because sometimes what they want the quarterback to do and what they how the personality they want in the quarterback, sometimes it's just not fair. The kid has won at every level. I don't know how you can take over for Baker Mayfield and not know the X's and O's. They ran the same offense. They ran the same volume of offense, because I remember people talking about Joel Klatt talking to the head coach during the season when, Nick, you pointed out, he's playing better than Baker
Mayfield. He's playing better.
And Baker Mayfield was, he broke records in college.
Right, in consecutive years. Efficiency record, broke his own efficiency record, and then Kyler had a better season than Baker did. I've never heard the X's and O's stuff. I've never heard the critique of the board work, but that's maybe just because he hasn't been exposed to that type of scrutiny like you're talking about. But this comment that he didn't interview well does not surprise me. You talked to him at the Super Bowl.
Yes.
You said on TV, like, you thought he might not be a guy that walks into a room and grabs you the way Baker did.
Right.
I watched him.
That was the first thing that I did notice.
Right.
And I didn't necessarily say that was a negative, because I've seen guys in the locker room, and typically I have seen Randall Cunningham. He was a different type of leader. Jeff George, he got criticized a lot. But if they would have taken Jeff George and told Jeff George, I just want you to play on the football team. I don't want you to lead. I don't want you to have the pressure of the responsibility to lead, because Jeff was a funny, soft-spoken guy. He wasn't a take charge, but he's the most talented, besides Warren Moon, right, quarterback that I had ever seen throw the football. So you can be different and be a quarterback, but in the NFL, sometimes they won't allow it.
And this is what concerned me going into the combine. I also watched his media interviews. And some guys aren't good in the media. They're good behind closed doors. Sometimes it's telling that they're just not great speaking.
They're not comfortable.
They're not comfortable. And I had a really distinct feeling this type of report was going to come out. That's why I thought he should have thrown. That's why I thought he should have run. Because if the only thing that's going to come out of the combine is the negative stuff, if he would have thrown, it would have been, you know what, while Charlie Casserly's talking about that, you know what tape they're showing?
Him at the combine
killing
great
it.
Point,
is
great
him point. Him doing these drills, so you have something to weigh it against. Doesn't change whether he throws or not. Doesn't change the how good of a football player he's going to be. But narratives matter. And the point that he's making, which is, if the Cardinals don't take him, how far could he fall? Like,
sometimes narratives
get away from you.
I doubt if he falls past the Raiders. He's definitely not going to fall past the Dolphins. And you have to realize that some of these places, they are craving Oklahoma-type offense in the NFL. So the thing he strived at, now I can understand, man, if he was going to some ball control, like, if he was going to Jacksonville and they were getting ready to force that offensive system, I'd be like, hey, man, buyers should beware. But the offense that he ran and mastered looked pretty good against Alabama, especially in the second half once they got used to that power and speed. So he's going to be successful in the NFL. But I just meant, be careful with the type of scrutiny, because sometimes from the time these kids finish their last game, NFL analysts, ex-NFL players, former NFL executives like Charlie is, and a lot of respect for the job that he did, their job is to tear these guys down as far as what they can't do. The kid's won at every level. He can throw the football like nobody's business. He has electrifying playmaking ability that we have seen. We got 20 coaches in the NFL out of the 22 of the 32 that are offensive coaches.
Right.
So his ability will be highlighted in the NFL.
Nick, what do you think is more important, a great leader or a great football player when it comes to the quarterback, or a guy that's going to be taken as high as Kyler Murray?
I think that the quarterback position is, more than any other position in all of sports, not just physical, not just attributes, especially a young quarterback. I think it has to be. You talk about all the time how different NFL locker rooms are, how no matter what Kevin Colbert will tell you, it's a bunch of grown men, and you need to have a presence about you. So I do think it matters. I think Baker Mayfield, part of his success was off the field, was in the locker room, in the team meetings, with the guys.
Which is what impressed everyone at the combine last year.
100%. So I think it really matters. I think Tom Brady, before he turned into this quarterback, was a great leader and had a presence about
him. Yes.
So I do think it can hurt you. But I also think it's something you can learn. I think it is something you can become more comfortable with. I think
let me tell you who he's not. He's not Jamarcus Russell.
Sure.
All right?
Okay.
The kid was 43-0 in high school football in the state of Texas, playing at his highest level. Last year with Oklahoma, won the Heisman Trophy, lost two games, was brilliant, the best player in college football.
The other thing, though, C, is here who I think it's also fair to say he's not, Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, similar size, all this stuff, but he is a guy who the moment he walks into a room,
dynamic,
and that clearly helped him particularly early in his career.
Sure.
So this is something Kyler's going to have to learn.
Yeah, I wouldn't compare a lot of people to Russell Wilson.
Sure. Right.
Russell Wilson, man, is
special in that regard.
He's a grown man, but he has the type of temperament. He has the type of voice. He thinks about, man, he is a special leader. Now, we picked one of the best leaders that we have in the NFL who we're trying to compare him to. So that's not fair either.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, should the Warriors be concerned after last night's loss? That's next on First Things First. Back here at First Things First, we're joined by Chris Broussard. Hey, Chris.
What up, my friend?
Always good to be here.
Welcome.
I'm loving this week.
Yeah, it's been fun.
I get to see you guys every morning.
Yeah. Nice. It's warm
out. We thought we'd bring you in for the official burial of the greatest player ever.
We're not even talking about that right now.
We are talking about the Warriors, though, Broussard. Last night, Golden State was handed a 33-point loss courtesy of the Boston Celtics. That is the Warriors' worst home loss since Steve Kerr became the head coach. It is also the fifth time they have been defeated by 20 or more at home this season. Dubs have lost five of their last eight. Here's what Steph Curry had to say about the team's struggles last night.
If we want to be the team that we want to be come April, you can't continue to just talk about it and talk about it and expect to be able to flip a switch. At some point these next 16 games, we got to show it. And there is a subtle confidence that, you know, we've been here before, and when the lights are bright, we show up. So there's a balance somewhere in the middle there that can't have nights like tonight, though, where a team just pounces on you and embarrasses you in your home floor.
Broussard, this Warriors team has a number of nights like they had last night. Maybe not as bad, and we just keep saying, okay, they had it, they'll be fine. It's right, the Warriors. Right. They're fine, no worries, they're fine. But I don't know, Steve Curry made a few comments there that they have a couple things that they do need to address and they do need to correct. Are you buying that the Warriors have actual flaws on this team?
Well, it's funny because, Steph, you saw that underlying smile and smirk.
Well,
he's not too concerned,
I don't think. That's my point.
I'm not concerned. They're still the heavy favorite, my pick. It is a reason only three teams have three-peated in the last 52 years. Jordan's Bulls twice and Shaq Kobe Lakers. Because it's difficult. It's a mental drain to play these regular season games when you know it's all about May and June, even June for you.
And there's a reason no team's been to five straight finals.
Right.
Since Russell Celtics. LeBron went to eight straight, but he got
different teams.
So we're talking about Steph, Klay, Draymond, Iggy. I know Durant's new, but those four guys trying to do this for a fifth straight 100-game season.
It's a challenge. If you look at Jordan's Bulls, the two that three-peated, the third season, their regular season record was always the worst. Mm-hmm. So it happens. That said, they do there are some concerns I have about this team. I think this is the most vulnerable they've been since Kevin Durant got there. And here's a few things. Boogie. Now, when you look at DeMarcus Cousins, the eye test, he's running the floor, he's sharing the ball, he's moving okay for him. It looks fine with the eye test. And when you look at the conventional numbers, 15 points, 8 rebounds, a team high in 25 minutes, you think, okay, Boogie's fitting in. You look deeper into the numbers. Defensively, when Boogie is on the floor, they are one of the worst teams in the league. Their defensive rating is like 107.7. That's mediocre. When he's, 108.6.
Yeah, which is even worse.
Right. When he's not on the floor, their defensive rating is better. Offensively, when he's not on the floor, they play at a historic level offensively. And when he's there, they're more like a mediocre team. Their net rating is 9 points better when he's off the floor.
And it goes deeper than that. So when they're all NBA lineups out there, all five guys
that start,
they are the Clay, KD, Steph, Boogie, and Draymond. They have a negative net rating. They're being outscored by their opponents when those five are out there. When the four are out there
without Boogie,
they're beating opponents by 12 points per 100 possessions. That's a problem.
Kerr is going to have to make the tough decision because you know they see it. You know they have these numbers. Look, before Boogie got there, Steph was the only weak link defensively. And teams would try to target him, get him in pick and roll, but you could protect him. Now you have two guys you can go at if you're an offense in Boogie and Steph, and that's made them vulnerable.
The one thing that was a calming force for me, that guy doing the interview.
Man.
Right.
I mean, I've been watching guys complain, make excuses. Man, I hate this. Man, the media, y'all did this to me. Steph Curry, bro, he's the calming force in the NBA right now. KD is unstoppable. He is a matchup nightmare. But Steph Curry sat there like a grown man in his uniform.
The leader.
Yes. The way you want your leader to be able to talk, because ultimately he can't make excuses. And he said it in these last 16 years. We're going to have to show some people because this is new to them, too, having Boogie. Now, these guys have made all these sacrifices. Nick, you mentioned something to me last season when everyone was upset about Boogie signing with the Golden State. He's like, they can't get better offensively.
Right.
It's impossible.
Right. They had the greatest offense in NBA history last year. So, like, you at some point, you reach a point of diminishing returns. Like, your offense is not going to be more efficient. So this was the reason that the Boogie acquisition, in my eyes, was a good one for them and a no-brainer was it removed the injury component to a degree. Last year, when they went through this late season swoon, it was because Steph was out. There was time when KD missed a little bit of time, Clay missed some. And if during a playoff series you're missing one of those guys, well, now then all of a sudden feature
right.
Boogie.
Last year we sat down and talked and we said, okay, how are they going to not three-peat?
Right.
Like, what would have to happen in the NBA? And Nick said, man, that's like an insurance policy.
And as an insurance policy, it might be a good one. But as an insurance policy that you're having to actively use when you don't actually need it yet, you're seeing the negative aspects of it. And so, like, that is because the point that was made to me that we talked about was if the offense can't get better and he's not going to help your defense, then how does he make you better? Yeah. It's not like he is some calming locker room force. But this isn't – I think your point on Steph is a very important one because we didn't play it, but KD's postgame interview couldn't have been more different. KD, the media asked him about Steve Kerr said we got to play with more anger.
Right.
And KD's like, oh, I thought we were based on joy.
Because
like,
Kerr's been saying that all season.
Right. And KD is – irritable. You know what I mean?
And KD didn't play well. They were without Clay. Right. KD didn't have a good game.
Right. But the other concern for me is Boogie notwithstanding. Last year, people are going to say, okay, last year they ripped off 10 of 11, and then they went on a 3-7 stretch. But Steph wasn't there. Right. We haven't seen this team not play well with Steph on the court. They won 16 of 17. Since then, they're 3-5. And Steph's been playing. Like, the invincible part of this team for 4-plus years has been, do we have Steph, do we not have Steph? They won games without Durant. I understand Clay wasn't out there last night and hurt their shooting, and it really hurt their defense. But it's odd to see them struggle when Steph's been healthy.
If there's one thing that if I was to say I would be concerned about, that's their home record. I mean, their home record is not like any other team that we've seen. Right now, I think there's 9 other teams in the league that have at least the same home record as them or a better home record than them. And they have been dominant. Oracle has been a special place. And this being the last year that they're going to play there, that would be something that I would be more concerned about, the number of losses they have at home.
The other thing with you mentioned Steph. Steph is like their Tim Duncan. I've been saying this for years.
Okay.
Since this run began with them. Different personalities, but Duncan set the tone in the whole organization. So when you came into the Spurs, everybody bought in because Duncan set that tone. It's the same thing with Steph. He brings that, like Kerr talks about, that joy. Steph even though Draymond's been the inspirational leader, I guess, and all that, Steph has set the tone for that whole franchise. And Draymond is interesting, too, because we know he's always been one of the best defenders since this run began. His defense has steadily declined since 2015, and now it's at an all-time low for him. He's still a good defender, but he's not
the defensive player.
Yeah, his body is starting to break down a little bit on him.
Which is a big concern for them when it comes to contract stuff. He just signed with Clutch, and I'm not saying because he wants to go play with LeBron, because I don't think that's why. I think it's because they will hold you to the fire. And if he was, in my mind, I know Kawhi won a couple of the Defensive Player of the Year awards. I think Draymond had a three-year stretch where he should have won all three. I thought Draymond was the best defender in the league, bar none. When he is just a very good defender, then his value proposition changes enormously because his shooting's at an all-time low because of these other these other potential issues.
God, Warriors are the worst. Broussard, stick around. Coming up, will the Lakers' struggles hurt their chances of a star joining LeBron this offseason? That is ahead on First Things First. Back here with Chris Broussard, talking Lakers. So a column in USA Today suggested Anthony Davis be wary about joining LeBron with the way the Lakers have been playing. If the Lakers miss the playoffs, which they most likely will, it'll be their sixth straight year out of the postseason and their first with the best player in the league, arguably. Chris, should AD and other stars be worried about coming to LA now?
Look, I don't think they're going to get any of the free agents. They may get the Anthony Davis trade done. Maybe a free agent could be Jimmy Butler, but I don't think the top four guys, Klay, Kawhi, KD, Kyrie, I don't think they're getting any of those guys.
Why?
I think those guys want to do their own thing.
Nothing to do with LeBron. They just want to do their own thing.
Well, the fact that LeBron's there means
it's –
Right. But that said, I'm going to give three reasons why I actually think it is probably a good time to join LeBron. It could be a good time. Number one, when you join LeBron historically, it's always about LeBron. If you win, it's LeBron won a championship. If you lose, the supporting cast, including some of the stars, that last year in Miami, D-Wade's not healthy, Bosh is not the same, Kevin Love in Cleveland's not the same, you get blamed. Now, this season has gone so poorly with LeBron that if Kevin Durant went there, he'd be viewed as a savior. Like, you know what I mean? It wouldn't be
LeBron.
Narrative right.
It.
Now it would be like KD and LeBron, or KD came there and kind of saved him. LeBron would still get his pub, but that's different. So you wouldn't be the second guy in the narrative. You would be an actual guy that
was a co-star.
Instead
of a supporting actor.
Exactly. Good way to put it. Secondly, LeBron is going to be the man for what? One or two more years. If Anthony Davis or whoever goes there, you can look at it like, look, I can go there. LeBron will be the guy the next couple years. Maybe we can win a ring. And then I'm going to become the man.
Of course.
LeBron will still be good enough as
Lakers.
A second guy. On the Lakers, right. Not on Oklahoma City or Utah, on the Lakers. And so LeBron will still be good enough to be your second guy and maybe help you compete or win championships. Thirdly, I have it written down. LeBron, his strength, I think, throughout his career, it's been a strength and it's been a weakness. He does everything. So we talked about the LeBron system. He doesn't really fit into a system. He becomes the system because he can do everything.
Yeah, he has high basketball skill level at almost everything.
Yeah, he might be the point guard, one possession, and posting up on the next and on the wing on the third, which I think is great for role players because he does it all and creates for them. But for a talented all-star teammates, it can be tough because you don't know from, you know, possession to possession what your role may be. As his athleticism declines a little bit, I actually think, I don't know if he'll make the mental adjustment to that. But I think it'd be smart of LeBron if he did choose one thing that enable him to fit more into a system. Like, if he said, I'm just the point guard now,
and I think
I'm average 23-12.
I think that is what the next phase, not
starting
next year.
Right, a reinvention.
But when you're talking about if they get a star, by the time that star has surpassed LeBron, I think LeBron, it's not he's going to be some small ball five. I think he's going to be playing point guard. I think he's going to be orchestrating from the top.
Or if he did, I agree, he could do that. Or he could go be just a regular small forward or power forward and still average 27 a game and 9 or 10 rebounds and post guys up.
A rich man's Karl Malone.
A role, and I think that'd be easier for talented players to fit around him. So I think those are good reasons. I don't think anybody will join him, but I think those are good reasons. I don't like
LeBron continuing to play the point because he's not going to get more athletic, as you mentioned. So on the defensive side, what is he going to do there?
That's where the struggle would be.
Okay, it's going to be a struggle. But I like the mix of being a point forward where he can still be a playmaker, but I like for him to get back to the Miami days of getting into the post because I know that's something he can do for 3 to 5 more years. He can't play point guard. He can't get up and down on the West Coast with those point guards for the next 3 to 5 seasons, even though that's a part of his skill set. You have to set the offense up to allow other people to be able to bring the ball up the court and also for younger guys to be able to defend guys like that and chase them around all those picks and everything. You can't expect that overall athleticism to continue. So for me, it would be to balance it with post play the way he did in Miami with Pat Riley. I think that would be better served moving forward than just trying to be more of a distributor the way that what we've seen.
When I talk about LeBron later in his career going almost exclusively to the point guard position, I'm thinking in the role of Jason Kidd with the Mavericks, where he was a three-point shooter and passer, and he wasn't guarding the other team's best guard. They would hide him defensively.
He'd be much better than that.
Of course. No. Absolutely a better version of that. But my point is, Kidd, they didn't think could chase around Chris Paul and Steph Curry either. But forget the position part aside. To Jenna's question, has this disaster over the last month hurt the ability to get a co-star for LeBron? It certainly hurt their ability to get a free agent, I think. In an odd way, I think it has clearly helped their ability to trade for Anthony Davis. Brandon Ingram is playing the best basketball of his life, and the Lakers now have a lottery pick. Like, those things are reality. Like, Anthony Davis, I can tell you unequivocally, Anthony Davis hasn't had any, at least public conversations, or even with people around him. You know what? I think I'm going to cross the Lakers off my list.
Oh, that has not happened. Not at all.
And Anthony Davis, it's a trade. It's about which team can present the best offer to the Pelicans. And now that the Lakers, their pick is going to be a lottery pick, and Brandon Ingram is finally showing what his actual upper potential is at the same time as Jason Tatum kind of going in the other direction, all of that has helped the Lakers in their ability to trade for Anthony Davis. I think it's hurt their ability to sign Kawhi Leonard.
Well, I think their overall struggle, and because I would beware of the Clippers. And the reason why I'm going to beware of the Clippers is because of two things. People haven't mentioned Jerry West, but Jerry West, man, despises the Lakers and despises the people in the front office at the Lakers. I'm not going to mention the names, but Jerry does not like them. And his ability to be able to run the Clippers and Doc Rivers to be able to attract free agents, that's what I would be more worried about, because they don't pull off the trade for Anthony Davis. The Clippers are dangerous. And I wouldn't be surprised if even Kevin Durant, if he looked at going to the Clippers.
The dream scenario for the Clippers is Kawhi and KD. And I was told yesterday by a good source, we all know Kyrie and KD are considering the Knicks, right? Mm-hmm. But I was told that they have some apprehensions about New York. Why? Because of the media.
Yes, sir.
Which is, makes all the sense in the world from what we've seen.
Them two together?
That could benefit the Clippers. Because L.A. is obviously a great city.
Mm-hmm. No, all you have to do is ask the media very nicely. Please take it easy on these two. We're awesome. The L.A. media is
not the New York media.
I know. They don't ask those questions that you do when you're a reporter for that show you're on and everything.
Hold on. No, don't. Oh, he's talking about your homeland.
Homeland.
He wasn't talking about your professional career. He's talking about your acting career. I translate for Chris Carter. Listen, I'll say this. I got you. I know. Jenna was angry. I knew exactly.
See the look I gave.
Jenna's an actress as well as one full television personality. Just real quick, if all that's true, if Kevin Durant is going to go to L.A.
I'm not saying they're not going to New York. I mean, I'm just saying
it's
going to
be a lot of empty office space in New York City that's been rented in the last 6 months for a business opportunity out here that is going to be vacant if Kevin Durant.
Man, if you don't think Kyrie Irving and KD can change their mind, you haven't been watching basketball.
That's true. Within the day.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.